Hey, what's up, everyone? It's Hooman of the Serenvini Morning Show, and I am graced with the presence of the beautiful, talented Mia Maestro, who you might have seen in Twilight and Scandal and The Strange Poseidon. I saw that. So Mia, welcome to San Francisco.
Thank you so much. It's so lovely to be here.
Do you love this city?
I love it so much. Yeah.
Can you tell me a few things you love about San Francisco?
I love the food.
Okay.
I love surfing in San Francisco. I love the wine country.
Did you grow up surfing?
No, I did not. I started surfing in Los Angeles. Yeah. Which is my second home. I've been there for a long, long time. Yeah.
What is the best place you've ever gone surfing?
Oh, I've been to really good places.
Tell me. Brag a little bit.
Tahiti, Oahu. California, Ventura is great. Mali was great. That's home for me. So, yeah, pretty lucky.
So I know we're supposed to talk about a movie, but there's a lot of things fighting for attention in my mind when it comes to you. So I'm just going to kind of go with those things for a second. You're born in Argentina.
Yes.
When did you come to the United States?
I came to the States in, I think, 2000 or 1999.
Okay, were you an established actress at that point?
I was a very young actress, but I had done some really cool projects, and one of them brought me to the States. I was in a film called Tango, and it was nominated for Best Foreign Film in the Oscars and Golden Globes. So I came to the States for the Oscars, and yeah, so it was pretty cool.
And how often do you go back to Argentina?
It depends on the year. I have a couple of projects, film projects, that I'm going to be doing end of this year, beginning of next year. And sometimes I go 4 or 5 times a year. Sometimes I go just for Christmas and New Year's Eve. It depends. My family, they come to the States or we meet in Europe. So it depends, like, you know, for how many months I haven't seen my mom and my dad.
Oh, yeah. And do they love coming up here to visit you?
Well, you know, Los Angeles is a tough city. Yeah, it's not their favorite. I think they would wish I would live here in San Fran or in New York. Yeah, they would enjoy it a little bit more. Yeah,
sure. And one last question. In the United States, what's your favorite restaurant that serves Argentinian food?
I don't have one.
What?
No, I'm sorry to report. It's really hard because an Argentine restaurant that is really good, it has to do with the quality of the food and the produce and the meat. And I haven't found one. No, so I'm a very good cook. So I get like amazing, you know, amazing pieces of organic, grass-fed, sustainable meat. And then I cook it at home my way. So, yeah.
Beautiful. All right. Well, listen, let's talk about what we're here for, which is a film called Into the Okavango. And this movie, you're not an actress in it.
No, I'm a co-producer. It's a National Geographic documentary. And I'm so proud to be part of this project.
So you must say no to a lot of things. What made you say yes to this?
Everything. it's been a dream come true for me to be part of this project. I met Steve Boyce, which is the lead expeditioner of Into the Okavango, and an incredible scientist. I met him at the TED conference, and I saw his talk. He's a TED fellow. And I just fell in love with this project. And immediately I started talking to him. And TED is a really wonderful experience for whoever has been there. And, you know, you get to meet people from all over the world and you really get to bond and over like 4 days. So by the end of the conference, he's like, you should come over to Botswana and come on expedition with us. And I said, yes. And I just got myself a plane ticket. And it's like, yeah, whatever, like whenever, I'll be there. And I got there and I had no idea what I was up for. And it's changed my life completely. I had to pitch my own tent amongst lion and water buffalo and hippos. And you know, there's, of course, no weapons in the expedition. You do everything by water. We paddle like 6 to 7 hours a day. Into the Okavango, they identify all the plants, all the birds, all the animals in the area. Truly I got to see Africa with the most incredible group of scientists. And, you know, thanks to also National Geographic for having me there. So,
you know, you mentioned TED, but I hear the new TED is called Near Future. Is that correct?
Yeah, I've been there. It's an incredible conference. It's a little bit smaller, sure, more intimate. Yeah, it's a wonderful, wonderful conference that has been happening in San Diego. I don't know if it's going to happen in San Diego next year again, but somewhere in California.
That's shout out to our friend Zem.
Yes.
All right. Anyway, back to the into the Okavango. So, you know, I saw the movie last night. You were sitting next to me. You're sitting near me. And visually, it's just so compelling.
Yeah.
I want to talk about my favorite moment in the film, but I want to talk about the beginning of the movie because, well, why don't you tell us what the plot or what the expedition is, and then we'll get into what I thought.
Well, first of all, I'm so happy you said that because Neil Gelinas, the director of Into the Okavango, has done such a beautiful job visually with the film because it is a National Geographic film, but somehow it also has the quality of an independent documentary. And I think the movie has premiered in the Tribeca Film Festival at Sheffield and AFI Docs in Washington, here in the Sausalito Film Festival this weekend, coming up in the Green Festival in September, again here in San Francisco. And somehow all of the reviews and people that see comment on the look of the film. It's so unique. And somehow we don't see nature portrayed this way. The film talks and tells the story of the first of 9 expeditions that Into the Okavango and Steve Boyce, the leader of Into the Okavango, have done in the area from the highlands of Angola, a heavily landmined territory in the world, onto one of the most pristine ecosystems in the world, which is the Okavango Delta. And he wanted to do these expeditions because they've never been done. Angola is literally this black hole for scientists all over the world. It's never been truly explored, you know, basically because of the landmines, because of the political situation of Angola, it's been highly volatile over the years. And he's the first one that decided to do that. And by doing so, you find out why the levels of the delta in water have been decreasing, because all the water from the delta comes from these rivers. And it's as you saw, it's a crazy expedition.
Yeah.
The guys were there for months, really tough. You know, as I said, no guns, of course. The only weapons were their, you know, scientists, science weapons, like to measure water and wind and, you know, solar panels. And yeah, it was it's incredible. And the most beautiful thing is this is the first of many, many expeditions. Right now, as we're speaking, the guys have been on the field for almost 4 months doing another river that has never been explored, which is called the Cuando River in Angola. So they do this every year, you know.
So it was really fascinating to see, you know, the team arrive to the river, which ultimately fed into the delta.
Mm-hmm.
And the environmentally speaking, there are places that have a sense of being sacred.
Yes.
And at the beginning of this river, there was a mist. And there were no animals, and it felt like a sacred space.
Yes.
And then, you know, not to give away too much, but the river doesn't go exactly where they think it's going to go, and it's not doing what they think it's going to do.
Yeah.
And then you just see their struggle. But I love that moment. I loved that moment at the beginning.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's a bit of a like a magical place, which is the beginning of the Quito River, where it all begins, and that water actually starts flowing. And as we were saying before, it is a heavily landmine zone. So the expedition had the incredible help from the Halo Trust, which they've been like working on, you know, taking the mines away from those lands for many, many years. And they actually help all the expeditions, and it would be impossible to do any of the expeditions without the Halo Trust help. And when they get there, just to give a little bit of information for people that are listening right now, there's this beautiful source lake. But then after that, over, I think, over like 27, 30 days, the guys had to pull this makoros, where are this, you know, kayaks that have all the equipment, which are like almost like 400 kilos, yes. You know, over like 800 pounds each, and just walk.
Because there's no water.
There is water. Well, that's the irony. There's no visible water. But what they have found out in that moment is this incredible pit deposits that store carbon. And somehow they found out that whole area in Angola, which nobody knew about, like it's a sponge that holds the water for the whole delta. And it is one of the biggest, you know, pit deposits in the area, yeah. And nobody even knew about it. The same thing with waterfalls. These guys are mapping all these rivers that nobody has ever been in, you know, or they meet villagers, like in the movie that, you know, nobody had been to the village that you see in the movie for 40 years. Yeah. So the work that Into the Okavango is doing in Angola and just mapping all the wildlife, it's incredible. It's so invaluable.
It is incredible. It is invaluable. It's necessary. It's important. I want to talk about my favorite moment in the film. It's at the end, and there these guys are in their kayaks, their canoes, and you see just a tribe of elephants, one after another, passing in front of them. It was shot so well,
yeah,
that I felt like I was in the kayak.
Yes.
What's your favorite moment in the film?
Well, that is one of my favorite moments, having been there. And being on expedition with everyone, it's a miracle when those moments like that happen, where you just have to wait in the water for, you know, 50 elephants pass in front of you, and they're so close. There's only like 20 meters away from you. That's a beautiful moment for me. I mean, the underwater elephant shots, I don't think that's has ever been seen. I've never seen it before. It's this elephants just letting go of their weight and just dancing underwater. The aerial shots of the delta, the you know, the termite mountains, the lion shots, the stars in the delta. I mean,
the hippos. Yikes.
The hippos, which are not, you know. I remember I got onto the expedition the first day, and I got there. I had no luggage, by the way. My luggage was stolen, not stolen. Let me rephrase that. It was gone momentarily, and nowhere to be found. And I got there, and they're like, "Okay, Mia, this is your tent, and you have to pitch your own tent every night. Make sure you never go to the bathroom. You know, never like walk alone. Don't go to the bathroom. We always have to see you. Do not ever go, you know, behind a big termite mountain, because the water buffalo may be there. If you smell like a funky smell, just don't move, because probably there's an animal very nearby." And then I was like, okay. It's like, what have I gotten myself into? I'm adventurous, but I don't know if I'm this adventurous. And then I kept on things like, my mom has no idea that I'm here. Like, I haven't told my family that. They think I'm on a normal safari, but I'm not.
Isn't at those moments you feel the most alive?
Yeah, of course. And right? But then I remember the first morning after my first night that I was terrified in my tent, because, you know, you have hippos grazing next to you, and you see, like, you know, you hear lions. And we're not in any camp. I have a tiny tent, a one-person tent, and no clothes or anything, you know, the same clothes that I've been traveling for 48 hours. And we wake up this morning, and everyone's like, everyone has like a really kind of worried face. And they're like, well, we just found out that, you know, today probably we'll be crossing over like 300 hippos. And I was like, oh, amazing. And everyone's like, no. That is not amazing. And then we got in the water, and the hippos are terrifying. You cross, you know, being like 5-6 hours in the water, you cross many, 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 many of them. But then at the beginning, I was terrified when you would see like 30 or 40 of them and this big, big pots of hippos. And then you realize that those are normally the females with all the babies, and normally they're pretty chilled. But the ones that you're really afraid of is when there's like, you know, a pond of water and there's one male, very angry, territorial hippo. But all of them have such distinct personalities, and somehow, you know, Steve, Chris, and Water, who's one of the main characters in the film with Steve and Ajani, they kind of like talk to them, make noise. They know how to read them. So it's just beautiful to see the interaction between this bush man and bush women, like Ajani, interact with the animals. So you definitely feel quite alive.
You mentioned the landmines in Angola. I don't remember the stat, but did they say something like they've removed 25,000 of them today?
Yeah. I don't know the exact number, but it's,
you
know.
That's an overwhelming number.
Yeah.
And there's still more.
Oh, there's so many more. Yeah. Yeah.
Let's talk about, in this film, there's a media component, a larger conservation project. Can you tell us a bit about that?
Yeah, actually, the film is the media component of this big project, and we call it the Okavango Zambezi Watershed Initiative, and it focuses on the four most important conservation issues of the African continent nowadays, which is water security, carbon storage, elephants, and biodiversity conservation. And the main thing about the initiative is... the main goal is to establish the largest transboundary conservation site in the world. Mm. And by doing so, safeguarding and taking care of some of the biggest migrations on the planet of giraffe, hippos, wild dogs, lion. And also this, the delta holds half of the population of the elephants in the world, which is 200,000. I don't know if people heard correctly, but it does hold half of the elephant population in the world, which is huge. So by saving the delta and saving the whole Okavango Delta Basin, you would be protecting all these animals. It needs to be done, and it needs to be done fast. And that's the main goal that Into the Okavango has. There's a lot of information online if you go to the website, Into the Okavango, at National Geographic. And there's many, many... stages of the initiative, and is working with the Angolan government, the Botswana government, Namibia, also the transboundary park would also have parts of Zimbabwe and Zambia. So it's a five nation plan. And but then also it's working with the communities that are around that territory, and making sure that, like, schools are built, making the people that live in those parts of the world stewards of the land, create like a minimal wage for those people so they don't have to hunt or burn for bush meat.
Yeah.
It's a big project, but it's an incredible one. So hopefully also, there's the goal to working with UNESCO to create this site as a heritage site, international heritage site. And also once, if the conservation land gets preserved, which is over like 71 million acres of land, then hopefully would, and then it gets demined and the mines taken away and the communities involved. Hopefully by, 2023, 2025, one of the main goals would be to translocate some of the animals that somehow have been in the Delta to Angola, some of the elephants from the Delta to Angola, because that's their normal migration. Normally the elephants would be migrating all the way north to Angola and back and through Namibia and back to the Delta, depending the seasons. But because of the landmines and because of the poaching, the elephants are extremely, extremely, savvy, and they communicate with each other, so they don't leave the Delta because that's their safe space. So in a way, it's this beautiful story of this refugee elephants, that have stayed in the Delta, but to open their territory so they can go back and, where they belong. Angola, as we say in the movie, used to be the living room of Africa because there was so much wildlife. And right now, as you see in the movie, until you get to the Delta, there's only like a few animal sightings.
Yeah, yeah. All right, let's talk about the budget needed to kick off this transboundary project, protected park.
Well, it's not that high. It's it's that we need basically $30 million to do so. And if you think the amount of animals that you're saving and that you're saving one of the most pristine ecosystems in the world, I don't think that's such a big number.
How can people like donate?
You can go to Into the Okavango and National Geographic and also the Okavango Wilderness Project. So you can donate money directly there.
And are you, you may not have the answer to this, but have you guys raised anything towards the $30 million as far as you know?
Yeah, of course. I mean, the project has been raising money for a long time. I mean, the movies want, you know, it's part of like money that has been raised to create awareness. One of the main goals is to put the Okavango Delta on the map. You know, so instead of saying the Amazon, you can say the Okavango and people know, you know, what this region entails and what the beauty that it holds. And I think the movie is like, it's a big component for that. So, yeah, of course, a lot of money has been donated, but right now we need $30 million. And
yeah. Let's make this happen, people.
San Francisco, listen.
All right, listen. It's an incredible film. I want to end this interview on kind of a fun, high, light note. I was listening to an interview you did with Craig Ferguson.
Oh, that was ages ago.
I wanted to do my research. So, what happened to Argentina in the World Cup?
You mean this World Cup?
I mean this World Cup.
We didn't.
They were favored to win the whole thing.
Oh, let's not go there. We're just having such a good conversation. Well, we had an amazing team. We have an amazing team. We have great players. Somehow, we just didn't pull it together for this one. But hey, there's always like 4 years now, you just never know. Yeah, it's really sad. It's a sad subject.
Well, I was born in Iran. I was rooting for Iran. But when they beat Morocco, when the guy headed the ball into his own goal, I was like, oh, what a miracle. And then they tied Spain and Portugal.
I know.
And then they got kicked out.
But we played really well against France. That was one of the most beautiful, you know, matches of the World Cup, I think. Yeah. And also, it's really good to lose to the World Cup winner.
Oh, it is?
Yeah.
Oh,
so okay. That's how I like to, of course. So that's, you know, that's France kicked us out and they won. So it makes total sense.
Right. And then, listen, I want to end on a movie note. Is there anything that you have seen outside of Into the Okavango that you want people to see? Anything recently, Netflix, theater, anything you want to give a mention to?
I like people first to see Into the Okavango. That's my main goal. And it's going to be playing here at the Green Festival.
Oh, yeah.
September.
Talk about that real fast.
Yeah, we're opening the festival in September, which is a big honor. So I invite everyone to come and watch the film.
This is the San Francisco Green Film Festival. It's one I wasn't familiar with until you told me about it. And by the time this airs, that will have been announced.
Yep.
Okay, great. So everyone go see Into the Okavango. What is the website?
Into the Okavango at National Geographic. And wildbirdtrust.com.
WILDBIRDTRUST.com?
Correct.
Mia, I wish you nothing but the best. Thank you so much for taking the time. Thank you for being a part of this film. I'm hopeful that you guys will have all the success in the world.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me.